Monday, January the 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center. This year, we will be joined by international opera star Angela Brown and straight from America's Got Talent, Danielle Damon. That's Monday, January the 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center at 7600 Northeast Gleason. Or listen live on KBOO Radio or view it on Open Signal Community Television.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 3308 Northeast Peerless Place in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or at wilkinscpas.com. Hello everyone, thank you for tuning into KBOO Community Radio. As part of our special MLK broadcast and programming, coming up next is going to be my interview with Michael Loverett, who is also KBOO's new syndicator. So you get a twofer. You get to hear about a new person that is working at KBOO, as well as the way that MLK's life and legacy has influenced them. After the interview, we will be hearing about a half-hour audio tape from Martin Luther King addressing the NATRA, or the National Association of TV and Radio Announcers, to talk about the role of black radio and how people, especially black broadcasters in radio, are playing a major role in furthering civil rights and addressing the black struggle. I hope that you enjoy this interview and this piece of speech from MLK as much as I did, and happy MLK Day, everyone.
Things will never be the same. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's just the way it is. Oh, yeah.
I see no changes. All I see is racist faces. Misplaced hate makes disgrace to racists. We under. I wonder what it takes to make this.
Hello, Mikey.
Hello. Great to be here.
It's great to be here with you. It's great to have you here. You are new here at KBOO.
I am new here at KBOO. I am the new syndicated producer. Yes. And I am so happy to be a part of the KBOO family. It's been a joy and absolute just pleasure working here with you guys. This is the radio station after years of working in radio that I have dreamed of working at. So
it's a pleasure to hear that.
Yeah, I'm just so happy and elated to be here. So, yeah.
And you are coming from where?
I am coming from Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, so this cold is nothing.
This
for
cold
it.
Does nothing. Ain't nothing. Yes.
And how long have you been in radio?
I've been in radio. You know, honestly, I started in radio back in elementary school.
Okay.
We had a radio station in our elementary school, and I started back doing radio for the news at our school in the fifth grade. And then we had a radio station in our junior high school, and I did radio there. Had a radio station. No, we had a TV morning show.
Ooh, okay.
In high school. Did that there. And then I really got into radio when I majored in mass communications at Lander University in Greenwood, South Carolina.
Sweet.
So it's been a part of my life for a very long time. And I've stuck with it through the good and the very bad. And like I said before, I'm just elated to be where I'm at right now in broadcasting.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. We are very happy, and more than that, we're very lucky to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
yes.
you. And so I'm speaking with you today as part of the special MLK Day broadcast and programming. And I wanted to ask you a couple of questions in regards to MLK, and especially being a person of color, black person in media, mm-hmm. in radio, in Portland, mm-hmm. Which are a lot of different layers, and also how MLK's legacy and MLK's messaging, how it, if at all, pertains to you in your, I guess, experience as a black person in radio.
Yeah. Do you want me to just like...
Yeah, you go just all of that.
Well, you know, like I said before, like I grew up in radio. You know, I also grew up in the Deep South where black radio broadcasting was very few and very sporadic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had to relocate my whole life to a bigger, larger market in Chicago where there are better opportunities for people of color in broadcasting. You know, I've had many, like I said before, I've had many ups and downs like in this field as a black individual, but also as a black queer individual in radio broadcasting. That's a double whammy right here. And, you know, I've been tokenized and discriminated against all at the same time at the same workplace, you know, by unapologetic white coworkers. And it's rough. It's rough when you are one of the only few in a workplace of in a radio broadcasting workplace, which I was. I was with WGN Radio in Chicago for a very long time, for years. And, you know, it was predominantly white. I was one of two black people out of a 70-person staff.
Oh, wow.
And some of the things that they got away with saying to me, now that I look back on it and now that I'm less wet behind the ears, I'm thinking, my God. Mm-hmm. How did I sit there and just let that fly? You know, I remember I used to have dreadlocks and it was 10 years worth of dreadlocks. And I remember this white man came up to me one day as I'm sitting there doing my work and doing it well. And he says, man, well, you sure got the hair for radio.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, when they say like you got the face for radio and stuff, well, you sure got the hair for radio. And so like then I didn't really understand it. But like when I as I got older, I was like, I you know, you start to it's just like when you start to realize stuff. Problematic stuff that white people say on any broad spectrum. Yeah. You know what I mean? The older you get, you realize, man, that was messed up when they said that. And so, like, it was a pattern of things like that working in a field like that in radio broadcasting. Like I said, when you're one of the only few black individuals, you have to do things twice as hard.
Yep.
You have to put twice the effort into your work, because if you don't, you're going to be looked at first when there's problems, and you are going to get thrown under the bus if there's problems. So after I left WGN, I went to another political talk radio station where I was there for 5 years, and I served as a technical producer. And, you know, I was one of the only few black producers at that station. Towards the end of my tenure there, I was producing up to 6 shows, and I was getting paid very low wage, struggling. Chicago's a very expensive city. And meanwhile, my white counterpart was producing only 1 show and getting paid double my wage. And it was because he was producing the daily show that we have in the afternoon, which is our main sort of headline show. But then like at the same time, I was sitting there watching him and I was like, what he's doing, I can do that. If I can sit here and produce all these shows, I can sit there for 3 hours in that chair every day and do the exact same thing for the same show every day. And so he decided that, well, you know, he needed somebody to start covering him, when he wanted, because he wanted to start going on vacations and stuff and things like that. And, you know, he wanted to find somebody. So he's like, well, why don't we ask Mike? And my boss, this white man, he was just like, oh, I don't know if he's ready. You know, this is a big thing. I'm like, sir, I've been doing this for a long time now. Just put me in the chair and give me that opportunity. And they did, and I blew them away. Because that's what we have to do. We have to take that extra step and that extra initiative, especially in this field of broadcasting. And that's what, and I did it, and I'm proud to this day of my accomplishments doing what I did at that station. And you know, now, like I said, I'm at a station now where I can take those skills that I honed there at that station and bring them here. But I'm around people that I feel appreciate them more here at KBOO compared to there. And you know, black folks, when it comes, and like I said, and like I can't stress enough, black people in radio broadcasting, we are passionate about what we do. Passionate about what we do. Not even just in radio broadcasting, but in broadcasting in general, TV and radio. Before my last radio station, I also worked at a black-owned radio station in Chicago called WVON. WVON, just like KBOO, has been around for over 50 years. What I've learned and what that radio station taught me about us and how we take pride in what we do when it comes to broadcasting is we have no time for mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, I was still wet behind the ears there as well. And like, I remember like working with black radio hosts there, and they used to be so tedious, and they used to be so, you know, sort of just like, they used to just be on me all the time about,
really,
hey,
meticulous about,
yes,
it. Yeah.
Hey, that didn't sound like, hey, my mic went up. Hey, mm-hmm. this needs to be, hey, we're not gelling right with this. And I'm just like, man, like, give me a break. Mm. You know what I mean? But then I look back on it, and it's just like I keep saying, we got to take the extra initiative. We got to take the extra step, because we have to make sure our stuff is perfection.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. They took pride in what they did, because when what we do when it comes to talk radio, we are empowering and informing our masses, our people. We are giving voices to communities that don't have voices out there, especially in communities like Chicago, where you have just folks that don't have their voices heard, where you have food deserts, where you have schools that are crumbling, where you have a mayor that shut down 30 schools,
yeah.
you know, public schools. You know, that's who we're talking to. That's who we're reaching out to. That's what black radio since the 1950s and the 1960s have been doing. That's what Martin Luther King was doing back in the 1950s and the 60s during the civil rights era. He was going on radio stations in Atlanta. He was speaking to the masses, telling them about, hey, we're going to have this service at church tonight, and he would speak at that service and tell them about what's going on out there in around the nation, and how, you know, they need to gather together and what they need to do in order to succeed and overcome. And that's what we've been doing ever since then, you know. So radio is essential for black folks, for a lot of black folks, to get the information that they need to stay informed and empowered, you know. Actually, Martin Luther King said, he was speaking at a convention in Atlanta, and he said that this black radio personality was his most powerful tool right now in his struggle and in his movement that he was trying to do. He said black radio was one of his most profound weapons right now to use, and he meant it. And it's true, you know, still to this day it is. You know, they say that radio is a dying breed, especially black radio is a dying breed, because so many radio stations now are merging and consolidating with these big companies. So trying to have black entrepreneurship in radio is very few and rare. It's just the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I read somewhere we went from like 200 radio stations back in, I can't remember, but like it dwindled in 2013 to like 160 or so. So it's you know, it's definitely, it is unfortunately for black folks in radio, it's looking like a bleak picture. But at the same time, we're finding other avenues and other spaces and stuff, like with so much advanced technology now, with podcasting, mm-hmm. with, you know, the web and stuff like that. We're finding different avenues to, like, you know, do our thing in broadcasting. And that's what's so dope about it. You know, I went to, in Chicago, I went to a school called the Illinois Center for Broadcasting. And I went there for 2 years, and that's where I learned everything I needed to. You know, I went to a 4-year college down in South Carolina, surrounded by like a whole bunch of white folks, learning half of what I learned in the 2 years that I was at that trade school in Chicago. And the majority of kids at that trade school in Chicago were black. They were all black. And what I noticed about all those black students is they were hungry mm-hmm. to succeed in radio. They loved what they did. They were driven. They were passionate. But then they were also easily dissuaded, because, like I said, in this industry, it is a white male dominated industry. So when it came to internships, and when it came to, like, you know, yeah, basically internships, they were always given to the few white students at the school. And that discouraged a lot of black students at our school. But at the same time, you know, I was one of those few that I felt like I succeeded in my internships, and I succeeded in you know, just doing my thing. And like, I don't want to like toot my horn, but I did, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so I was always in just telling them, like, you know, don't be discouraged. You know, you are in one of the largest like markets here in Chicago. And, you know, we need more black radio personalities now more than ever, you know. because like I said, we have a job out here right now, and to empower and to inform and to educate and to uplift these folks and the masses out here. And you know, they have to get their news from somewhere. They have to get their motivation from somewhere sometimes. And you know, and when you listen, and they felt that and they knew that, and so it was dope to see just the students at that school and how passionate it proved that how passionate we are still about radio broadcasting. If anything proved it, it was that school and those students. So yeah, I know I'm saying I'm dropping a lot right now.
No, it's all good.
Yeah. So with MLK Day coming up, I think it's definitely important to remember that MLK, that Martin Luther King had a very large influence on Black radio broadcasting back in the 1950s and 60s that still carries a legacy to this day when it comes, and I can't stress enough, to empowering, educating, and informing our communities. And it's like he said that his greatest tool right at those moments was broadcasting, to get his message out to our people, to our masses, to let them know what's going on around Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, you know, where the plight was. And it was his weapon and his tool, and to this day it is our weapon, it is our tool, it is a skill that we do so well at. Black mm-hmm. radio is dope. Black radio is powerful. Black radio is beautiful. Black radio is smart. It's funny. It's sexy. It's bold. It's everything you want it to be, especially if you're the one behind the mic. And that's what I've learned in my experience with it. And I am just so grateful every day to have the experience that I've had with radio. And if I can encourage any Black person out there that wants to pursue a radio opportunity or a career in radio, I tell them, go do it. Because the more voices we have behind this mic and over the air, reaching out to our communities, the better. So definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I think it's like really important is that as Black programmers, and you know, working in radio, we have the power to legitimize institutions. You know, if there is an all-Black institution organization, and whenever there's a story, and we as programmers go back to them, or as reporters go back to them numerous times, all of a sudden that voice becomes the authority on a specific subject. Mm-hmm. And what kind of world would it be if Black voices were the authority on Black issues or non-Black issues, housing issues, you know, natural resources issue, all sorts of issues like this, because our experience and the experience of people of color, indigenous people, all these people that have been disenfranchised throughout the years, it's so different, but it gives a different perspective, and then it shifts the conversation, it shifts the narrative, and then, you know, it becomes a greater conversation. And you know, I always think of you said mentioned podcasting, you know, because radio is kind of you know, has all the ups and downs, like you mentioned, the Breakfast Club.
Yes.
You know, yeah, I and it's like kind of a little silly.
That's my guilty pleasure, I'm not gonna lie. I think Charlamagne the God is slightly problematic, but you know, the Breakfast Club is that's my guilty pleasure, though.
And and it's crazy that it's not just Black folks that listen to that. I've heard people at KABU, like volunteers mm-hmm. at KABU, that I don't think are you know, I don't think that the Breakfast Club are aware that, you know, this demographic is listening to them, but like older white dudes that are familiar with the Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. And now, boom, all of a sudden you have this demographic that's listening because they want to, mm-hmm. you know, they're looking for it, mm-hmm. and now they're getting educated from a different point of view. They're getting educated about Black issues from actual Black people. Mm-hmm. So it's like that in itself gives you just a more intimate view, a more like, you know, just a podcasting, radio.
When we talk about a more wider and broader scope, when we talk about the internet, not even just podcasting, but YouTube,
mm-hmm.
The webcast on YouTube and stuff, and watching Black folks inform and educate on their YouTube channels mm-hmm. and stuff, it's an amazing thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I just started getting into it. You know, at my other job, I work third shift, and I just sit there and I go to some of these channels there, and I watch like some of these Black queer individuals talk about their struggles and like their experiences and stuff just growing up, and I'm like, dang, that's my life. That's mm-hmm. my story. You know what I mean? And just to be able to see their face looking back at you, that's dope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, YouTube can get a little rough, especially when it comes to the comment sections. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is what it is. You're going to have your haters and you're going to have your, you know, the people that that judge you. But that's whatever. Mm-hmm. That's beside the point. We're talking about, you know, how to reach to an audience at a more personal and intimate level, and I can't think of anything better than something like YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's definitely dope, and it's definitely something that I've been like really like enjoying lately, like just watching and like and hearing Black folks on YouTube. So
yeah,
definitely.
I mean, even like hair tutorials, like yes. I didn't know what to do with my hair until pretty much YouTube came along, you know, like,
and I'm sitting there watching like skincare mm-hmm, product mm-hmm. Videos and stuff like that, you know, that's something that you don't really hear on the radio.
Or and it's like, you know, it's just like, for example, like our hair is different, you know, so like the generic this is how you lather, rinse, repeat just doesn't work for me, and it's like you know, between the radio, just general broadcasting, just broadcasting Blackness to the world, it comes back. It's like a boomerang because it's like you're reaching out to your people because we are, you know, in the diaspora. You know, even people, you know, been here for 300, 400, you know, years, it's still, you know, we still are meant to feel like we are the other, like we are different.
Of course.
And broadcasting ourselves, you know, whether it is in things like Insecure, the TV show, or Black Book Talk, which is a program here on KABU, it's just seeing that Blackness is awesome. Isn't it's amazing. It's new. It's refreshing. It's
and what
powerful.
And what I've learned about Black folks in radio is we look out for each other.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, we take each other with us when we move up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I remember back in Chicago, I worked with these folks at this one on this one radio show, and they had been around for a while, and they were like, "Man, we're gonna keep you on. Like we want you to come up with us and stuff like that. We're about to have this radio show with the governor elect." Pritzker, forget his name, and like we want you to be on and be our producer and mm-hmm. stuff, and they look out for you because we got to, you know, we have to, because we're going to remain stagnant just like we do in every other career field, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is in a white dominated market.
It's when true.
Things
are changing, and I think that, you know, like you mentioned with MLK and how just bringing it back to that, mm-hmm. He found the outlet in a block broadcaster
mm-hmm.
In order to amplify the message. And it's like, imagine if you see yourself in someone and say, well, you know, this person made it in radio. Maybe I can make it in tech, or maybe I can make it in medicine, or maybe I can take it and make it in government or something. It's just it opens door, and it might be these little things, but they are so impactful to some people. And I think that that's like, and at the end of the day, especially in radio, mm-hmm. Because it's just been it's a type of media that's been around for so long. Mm-hmm. You do get a different range group, ranges of ages and groups of people. Mm-hmm. So, you do have some people that were around when MLK was around, you know, and like they tell you these things and they these stories, and the message does get passed on through that, and it's like just it's so powerful, you know, hearing like Margaret Prescott or something mm-hmm. talk, or and then like have her daughter on the show, and then her daughter talk about like racism in science and stuff like that, where it's like each generation is bringing up their, you know, bringing up their thing, you know, their every generation has their different, you know, thing that they stand for, different things that's kind of, you know, in their time sphere,
yes.
And it's just so fascinating. It's beautiful.
It is, and it's so beautiful too, because, you know, with radio in general, it's impactful.
Mm-hmm.
It impacts people's lives, but when it comes to Black radio, it saves people's
lives. It really does.
Especially when I worked at WVON, we had one show where it was just a Black doctor.
Mm.
It was a group of Black doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And they just talked about, you know, ways that Black folks can, you know, change their eating habits, ways they can exercise more, teaching Black folks about their mental health,
mm-hmm.
especially because Black mental health is vital.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have somebody going, you know, on the radio, reaching out to folks in these desolate communities and who don't get the proper mental health services, you know, they need and they deserve, but they actually can hear somebody on the radio relate to what they go through. That's impactful.
And their doctor.
And their doctors.
Yeah, you know.
And they call in and they say, thank you so much. You know what I mean? And it used to bring me to tears sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because you can hear the pain and the struggle in their voice, but you can also hear the gratitude in their voice because they need that. And it's just... It fills my heart up so much sometimes when I think about like the influence and just the impact we can have with communities through Black radio, because we do save people's lives. I know we do. I love hearing Black folks calling in saying, thank you for recommending this to me in my diet because it saved my life. Thank you for recommending this to my mother and stuff when she was sick because it saved her life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just it's a beautiful thing to see. And I want to see that continue. And that's why I want to encourage, like I said, I want to encourage young Black folks to get into broadcasting. If you feel like you can make a difference, if you feel like you can help that one Black queer individual, that one Black woman, that one Black child, you know, do it. Do it. If you got something to say, say it. Yeah. And there's plenty of outlets to do it. YouTube, webcast, cable, go do it.
Yeah, come to cable. Come on, you know, to cable. Get training, podcasting, all of it.
Okay.
We're always looking for programmers, especially Black programmers, amplify all of these communities. And it's been such a pleasure having you at the station.
Oh, thank you so much.
And having this conversation with you.
Thank you.
Because it is, you know, it's, and again, we do have Black programmers here.
Yes.
I think the most out of all the community stations in Portland, that's for sure. But again, to like just have you here on staff, you know, as of course you're the syndicator, but it's just like, it's powerful, you know?
Yes,
and then other folks that have been here, Black folks that have been here longer for 30, 20, you know, 40 years, they see us and they are so proud and they always give me advice and they always like, they're, you know, just like very, you know, they look out. They look out because they know how hard it is. You know, they've been in Portland, you know, which has been penned the widest city by authors and journalists. So it's they know the struggle on different levels.
I love to see us succeed. I love to see us succeed. And I love to see us excel. I love when we put our brains together and live out Martin Luther King's dream. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And all of us together, too, like in a collaborative, that, you know, of course, like Black people, because that is what today is about, and you know, MLK Day and all in this conversation. But in general, to be able to, you know, execute the dream and of the, you know, beloved community and seeing everyone, you know, queer folks, Black folk, Indigenous folk, just getting, you know, getting their day in the sun, you know, just getting to feel welcomed, loved, appreciated, and but also, which is the most important part, supported.
Yes,
you know,
because we need that day in the sun now more than ever, especially through the times that we're going through right now. But you know, times have always been trying and hard for Black folks.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You know, they always say, "Oh, these are trying times." They've always been trying for us. You know what I mean. But we got each other, and you know, it, when it comes to Black, Brown, Indigenous folks in general, we got each other. And when we got each other, and we work together and we reach those masses through through avenues like broadcasting and media, it's a powerful and it's a beautiful thing, and I can't stress that enough. So yes to Black broadcasting, yes to Brown broadcasting, yes to Indigenous broadcasting.
Yes.
May it live on and may it thrive forever and ever. So yes
and here at KABU, I know that me personally as the public affairs director, I am so into it. I'm giving as much support, all the support, maybe too much support, but you know, it all comes back at the end, you know, just to hear, you know, in the morning time, to hear when usually, you know, the schedule is a very like homogeneous type of voices, but to hear like, we had a broadcaster, Jaira, who did the show Express Yourself, and just to hear that, you know, that song, that theme song coming in, and just that like energy and that passion that, you know, that you're talking about. And it just, you know, I can't hide it. It just, you hear it and you're like, yes, this is awesome. And I know that if that, you know, Martin Luther King was alive with us right now, I think that we would make him very proud.
Yeah. You know what? We all would. We really would. And we just got to keep his dream alive, and we have to continue the fight and fight the good fight because it ain't over.
Yeah.
And we have to remain vigilant. Remaining vigilant is important and it's vital to our communities. So, yes, that's what we need to celebrate when we celebrate this day, is our vigilance.
Yes. And one last question. I'm probably super busy. If you had to use only three words to describe MLK's impact on your life, what would it be?
Three words. Ooh, that's the tough one. three words to describe his impact on my life. And not in any consecutive order,
sure.
But definitely vigilance, like mm-hmm. I just
yeah.
said. Persevering. And but the last one would be adapting.
Mm, interesting.
You know, Martin Luther King, he in a lot of ways, he taught us that we did have to adapt in order to overcome.
Yeah.
In any situation. You know, sometimes we did have to, you know, we had to adapt.
Yeah,
and
we did.
You know, and you know, I'm not saying adapt in order, you know, bend on one knee or kneel over for someone. I'm talking about adapt in order to like make sure that your community is okay and safe,
mm-hmm.
making sure that, you know, you're looking out for your community and making sure that they remain safe and secure. That's what I mean by adapting. So definitely vigilance and adapting and persevering. That's three things that I've learned from Martin Luther King that I still take to me this day. And most importantly, if I can say four,
Go
it would
ahead.
Be overcoming.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Overcoming struggles, because that's what we still to this
every
very
day.
Every day.
Every day,
especially in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But they, so what, with all these struggles, you know, like you just said, what keeps you, how do you persevere? Like what keeps
well,
you
I
up?
Work with foster kids in a foster home, and I see some of the kids there, and I see them when I look at
mm-hmm.
them. And, when they sometimes tell me, "Oh, Mike, you're my favorite, you know, you're my favorite guy here," you know what I mean? That means the world to me.
Yeah.
That means I'm making an impact on a child's life, a queer child's life that, you know, when I was that age, was really hard for me in Greenwood, South Carolina. But to see them now able to hold hands with their partner at their school and be out and proud about it, and, you know, but still go through those same struggles, but still have more resources and more, you know, more
mm-hmm.
help now. That's what that's deep and that's real.
Yeah.
And I love every part of it. So yeah.
I'm so glad that you personally see that they do have more support now, which, you know, I don't know how old you are, but I'm assuming you know you aren't like, there isn't like 70 years in between you two,
yeah.
you know, so
mm-hmm.
it's like, that's really good. And I think that's part of the vision, MLK's vision,
yes.
is just providing some support so that the next generation can do more.
Yes.
You know, and
make sure
it's
easier for them.
Yeah.
You know what I
yeah.
mean? And it's definitely getting there. It's
yeah.
getting there. It's as long as we keep an open mind and open hearts and stuff, it's going to get easier for them.
Yep. Open hearts.
Yes.
Open hearts. Yeah.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes.
That's,
because
yeah.
black mental health is key and it's vital to succeeding and
yeah.
thriving. So, yeah.
Well, I hope that you keep succeeding and thriving.
Thank you so much.
I will try
much.
To do that myself as well.
Yes, you are so awesome, and it's been a pleasure working with you as well so far. And like I said, it's been such a pleasure being a part of the KBOO community, and I'm so happy to be here. So,
thank yes. you very much for being here again.
Thank you.
And do you have any final thoughts? Any?
No,
any kind
I just
of
want my black people to stay strong, stay proud, and stay vigilant. That's all.
Yes.
And happy MLK Day.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Have an okay day. Thank you so much,
thank
Mikey.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very kindly. Mr. Chairman, members of this very fine organization, the National Association of Radio Announcers, distinguished dais guests, ladies and gentlemen, I need not pause to say how very delighted I am to be here this evening and to share with you in your annual convention. I must apologize in the very beginning for being late tonight and for holding you up. I flew in today from San Francisco, where I had to address the National Association of Real Estate Brokers last evening, And after a rather long and tiring flight, I found myself with endless appointments and endless paperwork to do because the 10th annual convention of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference will open in this very hotel on Monday evening. And I have the responsibility of doing a lot of paperwork in order to get ready for that convention, and a lot of last minute things came up that I did not anticipate. And I certainly appreciate your patience and your kindness and your willingness to wait. I'm indeed grateful to Brother Jones for these very kind and gracious words of introduction. As he introduced me, I felt something like the old maid who had never been married. And one day she went to work, and the lady for whom she worked said, "Ann, I hear you're going to get married." She said, "No, I'm not going to get married, but thank God for the rumor." I know that all of these marvelous things that have been said about me can't be true, but thank God for the rumor. I valued a special opportunity to address you this evening, for in my years of struggle, both north and south, I have come to appreciate the role which the radio announcer plays in the life of our people. For better or for worse, you are opinion makers in the community. And it is important that you remain aware of the power which is potential in your vocation. The masses are almost totally dependent on radio as their means of relating to the society at large. They do not read newspapers, them through jet. Television speaks not to their needs, but to upper middle class America. One need only recall the Watts tragedy and the quick adoption of the Burn, Baby Burn slogan to influence of the radio announcer on the community. But while the establishment was quick to blame the tragedy of Watts most unjustly on the slogan of Magnificent Montague, it has not been ready to acknowledge all of the positive features which grow out of your contribution to the community. No one knows the importance of tall Paul White in the massive nonviolent demonstrations of the youth of Birmingham in 1963. The funds raised by Purvis Spann for the Mississippi Summer Project of 1964 are the consistent fundraising and voter education done for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Civil Rights Movement by Georgia Wood, my good friend of Philadelphia. Tonight I want to say thank you, not just to these few, but to all of you who have given leadership to our people in thousands of unknown and unsung ways. We would certainly not have come so far without your support. And in a real sense, you have paved the way for social and political change by creating a powerful cultural bridge between black and white. School integration is much easier now that they share a common music, a common language, and enjoy the same dances. You introduced youth to that music and created the language of soul and promoted the dance which now sweeps across race, class, and nation. It is quite amazing to me to hear the joyful rhythms which I found time to enjoy as a youth here in Atlanta years ago, coming back across the Atlantic with an English accent, or to see the Senator Javits and the Senator Kennedy's lost in the dances which we created. Yes, you have taken the power which old Sam had buried deep in his soul and throughout amazing technology performed a cultural conquest that surpasses even Alexander the Great and the culture of classical Greece. But my brothers and my sisters, we're only beginning. We still have a long, long way to go. And I would like to share with you the burden on my heart about the problems which still confront us. And if I would use a subject for what I would like to say to you this evening, I would call it transforming a neighborhood into a brotherhood. And I want to try to tell you the truth tonight. I want to speak honestly and frankly about many problems that we face in our nation and that we face in the world. For America sorely needs to hear the truth at this time. And I still believe that freedom is the bonus you receive for telling the truth. As Jesus said, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Transforming a neighborhood into a brotherhood. Now there can be no gainsaying of the fact that America has brought the nation and the world to an awe-inspiring threshold of the future. We've built machines that think and instruments that peer into the unfathomable ranges of interstellar space. We've built gargantuan bridges to span the seas and gigantic buildings to kiss the skies. And through our airplanes, we've dwarfed distance and placed time in chains. And our jet planes have literally compressed into minutes distances that once took weeks and months. Bob Hope talked about this new jet age in which we live once. He said it is an age of stopped flight from Los Angeles, California to New York City, a distance of about 3,000 miles. And if on taking off in Los Angeles you develop hiccups, you will hick in Los Angeles and cup in New York City. You know, it is possible because of the time difference to take a non-stop flight from Tokyo, Japan on Sunday morning and arrive in Seattle, Washington on the preceding Saturday night. And when your friends meet you at the airport and ask when you left Tokyo, you will have to say, I left tomorrow. This is what our nation has done through the invention of the Wright brothers, right on down to the present day. Yes, through our spaceships, we've literally carved highways through the stratosphere. And through our submarines, we've penetrated oceanic depths. All of this is a dazzling picture of modern man's scientific and technological progress. But what I want to say to you tonight, my friends, is that when we look to the other side, something basic is missing. We suffer from a kind of poverty of the spirit, which stands in glaring contrast to our scientific and technological abundance. We've learned to swim the seas like fish and to fly the air like birds, and yet we have not learned the simple art of walking the earth as brothers and sisters. And this is the great dilemma facing America. And you know, it comes to this point now. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. Now, there are three things that we must deal with if we are going to transform this neighborhood into a brotherhood. We've got to deal with the problem of racism. We've got to deal with the problem of economic injustice, of poverty. And we've got to deal with the problem of war. Now, let me start out talking about racism. More and more, we've got to tell the truth to America about this problem. And the truth means saying to our nation that the roots of racism are very deep in America, and they are still here. That racial injustice is still the black man's burden and the white man's shame. Now, admittedly, we've made some strides, we've made some progress, but this shouldn't cause any of us to become apathetic or lax or complacent. Recognize that the plant of freedom has grown only a bud and not yet a flower. The problems that we face are still very serious. Now, we hear a lot of talk these days about the so-called white backlash. I want to tell you what the white backlash is. It's merely a new name for an old phenomenon. It is a continued expression of the same vacillation, the same ambivalence that's characterized white society from the very founding of this nation. On the Statue of Liberty, we read that America is the mother of exiles. But it doesn't take us long to realize that America has been the mother of its white exiles from Europe. And she has not evinced the same maternal care and concern for her black exiles who were brought to this country in chains from Africa. And it is no wonder that our slave foreparents could think about it, and they could start singing in a beautiful soul song, in a beautiful sorrow song. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. It was this sense of estrangement and rejection that caused our forebears to use such a metaphor. You see, what has happened is that our nation has constantly made a positive step forward on civil rights, but it has usually simultaneously made a step backwards. There has never been a single solid, determined commitment on the part of the vast majority of white Americans on the question of genuine equality for the black man. In 1863, the Negro was freed from the bondage of physical slavery through the Emancipation Proclamation. But he wasn't given any land to make that freedom meaningful. And you know, it was something like having a man unjustly imprisoned for 30 or 40 years, and suddenly you discover that he's innocent, that he's been unjustly jailed for 30 or 40 years. And then you simply go up to the man and say, now you are free. But you don't give him any bus fare to get to town. You don't give him any money to buy any clothes to put on his back. You don't give him any money to get on his feet so that he can rise up once more as a man. But this is what happened to the black man in America. And we must remember this, that at the very same time when America refused to give the black man anything, just said, you're free, he was left penniless, illiterate, standing out in a situation not knowing what to do and where to go. But we must not forget that at the same time the Negro was being treated like this, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest. It says that our country was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor, and it refused to undergird its black peasants who were brought in chained from Africa with an economic floor. And so emancipation for the Negro was freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without a roof over their heads, freedom without bread to eat, freedom without land to cultivate. It was freedom and famine at the same time. And it is a miracle that the Negro has survived. But the white backlash didn't stop there. In 1875, the nation passed the Civil Rights Bill and refused to enforce it. In 1964, the nation passed an even weaker Civil Rights Bill, and even to this day has failed to enforce it in all of its dimensions. In 1954, the Supreme Court declared segregation unconstitutional in the public schools. And today, less than 10% of the Negro students of the South are attending integrated schools, which means that we have made 1% progress a year, and if it continues at this rate, it will take another 94 years to integrate the schools. Suburban politicians talk eloquently against open housing, and at the same time, or in the same breath, they contend that they are not racist. All of this tells us, my friends, that the white backlash is nothing new. The fact is that America has been backlashing on the question of genuine equality for the black man for more than 300 years. And this is something that we must realize and that we must see. And this is why I say to you that our job is still difficult. We still need your voices. We still need your support. And there isn't any way to solve this problem without pressure. There isn't any way to solve the problem of racial injustice without persistent, nonviolent pressure. There have been those who felt that it could be done another way. There was a great man in our history, and I do not come to you to criticize him tonight, because I think he was a sincere man. His name was Booker T. Washington. Mr. Washington believed that the problem could be solved through pressureless persuasion. He sincerely felt that. He felt that if you didn't push things too fast, and if you didn't bother the white South, if you didn't try to make the white man do something that he didn't want to do at that particular time, he would ultimately come around. Mr. Washington sincerely felt this, but he misread history. He did follow that approach. He started saying everything that the white people wanted to hear. He was honored for it. He was called the responsible leader. You know, I always get a little worried when I'm referred to as a responsible leader, because so often when some people call you a responsible leader, they are really telling you that you are a leader who will not tell the truth on behalf of your people. So often they mean that you are a leader more concerned about your budget than you are concerned about the freedom of your people. So often they really mean that you are a leader willing to say to the white power structure what they want to hear rather than what they ought to hear. And Booker T. Washington went on with the notion of pressureless persuasion. And the reactionary forces of the white South use that only to plunge deeper into the oppression of the Negro. He told us to let our buckets down where we were, and the problem was that there wasn't much water in the well. And somewhere we must come to see that we must rise up and stand on our own two feet and say to our white brothers that we are determined to be men. This is what the movement is saying. We are somebody. We are determined to gain our freedom. And we are going to start with ourselves by freeing our own psyche, our own souls. This is where we've got to start first. For you see, in the final analysis, if we're going to be truly free, nobody else can do that for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do that for us. No Johnsonian civil rights bill. If we are going to be truly free, we must reach down into the inner depths of our being and sign with the pen and ink of assertive manhood our own emancipation proclamation. And we must come to say, yes, I'm black, but I'm black but beautiful. I'm somebody. I have a rich and noble heritage, however exploited and painful it has been. And I've made a contribution to the system.
Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and the time now is just about 11 o'clock. We are going to begin our special broadcast from the Highland Church in about 30 minutes. This program will be a tribute to the life of Martin Luther King. But now we'll hear some music from Duke Ellington. Happy MLK Day to all of our KBOO listeners. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on donate. And please stay tuned for our special MLK broadcast beginning in about 30 minutes.
Join us on Tuesday, January 21st for Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years, a day of special programming looking back at the Trump regime, what happened, why, and the repercussions domestically and internationally. We'll focus on national policy, foreign policy, privacy and surveillance, policing, immigration, labor rights, confronting white nationalism, the environment, and much more. Again, that's Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years on Tuesday, January 21st from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.